Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, and earned a BA in communications from Denison University. Since 2010, he's held various senior leadership positions at Crane Communication, and since 2020, he's been its president and CEO. Founded in 1916, Crane Communications is one of the largest privately held business media publishers in the world, and it's the parent for Detroit Crane's business, Automotive News and 24 trade and business titles in North America, Europe, and Asia. His name, Casey Crane. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Casey Crane. Since 2020, he's been a CEO, president. Casey, welcome, an honor to have you.
Thanks, Jack, so great to be here today.
Let's start by talking about your mom and dad and childhood.
You know, Jack, it's I'm looking out your window right now, and we've been a part of this community for a really long time. I grew up on the east side in Grosse Pointe, as you mentioned, and Detroit's always been a part of our family. My father Keith bought Automotive News in 1971 and moved to Detroit when people thought that was crazy. Growing up in that family, Detroit was always a big part of, our social lives and, our friends. Our office is obviously headquartered downtown. And so, even as a young kid, I'd spend a lot of time in the city, when it didn't look exactly like it does today. So we're very proud of this town. We're proud to be here. And it's been a lot of fun.
What's the biggest thing, Casey, you learned from Dad? And what's the biggest thing you learned from Mom?
I'll start with Keith. He was always a very charming guy. And one thing I always noticed from him was he treated everyone with great amounts of kindness, from the valet guy to anyone that was helping him out with anything. And that was something that stuck with me. And, on my mother's side, she always lit up a room and people were always attracted to her. So I'm not sure it's one thing I learned, but I think the way she held herself, always with grace, that was the thing that stuck with me. Huge amounts of integrity, and I think people always look to her for that.
All right, let's go back 108 years. Your grandfather...
You know I wasn't there, Jack.
I know. Gustavus Dedman Crane.
Yep.
Tell us about Grandpa.
So one of the most interesting and I think fun things about where we are right now is I think he would have been so excited with our business and with the way technology plays such a big role in what we do these days. GD was an entrepreneur, and he was one of the first guys to understand a need for business-to-business information. He was a stringer, a reporter for many years, he was reporting on all these different topics and realized that there was a conversation that needed to be had at certain levels, and it wasn't being served. And so, he put our first publication together, and of all things, it was about healthcare, and it was for people that ran hospital, health systems and hospitals. So I think now, if he was able to participate in what we're doing, he would think it was incredible because we can reach, these huge audiences using technology, and the opportunities just keep coming.
He started, didn't have it at the time, the name, Crane Communications, but 1916, 108 years ago, I believe, in Louisville.
That's correct.
And then when he passed, your grandmother then took over.
Yeah, she was an amazing woman.
Tell us about her.
So Gertrude was famous for her energy and her adventurous spirit. She was the chairman of our business for a couple of decades. And, you want to talk about the life of the party. Skydiving on her birthday when she was 75 or 80, racing around in a NASCAR car. This woman had a lot of spirit and she was known for it. And, the people in our company absolutely loved her. She had a very close relationship with our employees. And I think she was really the one that set that, kind of family culture, into what we appreciate in Crane today.
All right. She chaired the company until 1996. And then your dad, Keith, and your uncle, Rance, took over. Talk about that partnership.
Yeah, you know, it's always great when you can find people with different strengths. And I think my father and my uncle epitomized that. You know, Keith was a very strong salesman and, you know, a very adept business person. My uncle was a huge entrepreneur, probably more like my grandfather. And we always joked that if either one of them was in charge, the company wouldn't be where it is today. But because they had that partnership, it worked really well. And they saw tremendous growth during that time. And, you know, again, I think they really played to each other's strengths and were able to really grow Crane Communications to what it is today.
When you were growing up, what did Dad talk about at the dinner table, Casey?
Ha! Lee Iacocca. you know, I mean, that was one of the things people always say, you know, did you always want to get into media? Did you always want to join the family business? And I'll tell you, Keith made it look like so much fun. And every night he'd come home and he'd have these wild stories. Imagine, you know, he's covering Detroit through Crane's Detroit Business and he's covering auto through Automotive News. And he'd just get home from the Tokyo Motor Show and he'd have been, you know, having dinner with the CEO of General Motors or the mayor of Detroit. And so you'd get these amazing stories about, you know, all the current events, what was going on. And it always seemed like like so much fun. And so the dinner table stories were usually about work. As you know, family business, it's the way it goes. You know, it's hard to draw the line between the family and the business. And so from a very young age, we all had a lot of fun participating in the company and you know, really sharing stories. And when you have a legacy like that, there's a lot to talk about.
We're talking to Casey Crane. He got hired by Dad in 2002 as a reporter. Find out the great stories. When we come back, we're going to find out some more stories. And I'm Jack Brasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Brasula. We're with Casey Crane, CEO of Crane Communications. Let's go back 22 years, Casey. Dad hires you as a reporter. What's the first story you covered?
We got to back up a little bit there, Jack. You know, when I was coming out of school, you know, there's two major parts of our business. There's the editorial side and there's the commercial side, you know, sales and marketing. And you've known me long enough now. I probably come off more on the sales side, you might think. And so I always assumed coming out of college, I'd go and work for one of our commercial teams. You're right. My dad hired me and he had different ideas. It was a very short phone call. And he said, you know, what would you like to do for our company? And I said, I love the auto industry. You know, the sales team seemed great. I'd love to try and contribute there. And there was a long pause, and he said, you know what, you're going to be a reporter. And I said, well, Dad, you know, writing's not my strongest suit. And he's like, well, you got plenty of time to figure it out. And that was the end of the conversation. Now, when you join an institution like Automotive News, you don't just automatically get to cover things. You've got to learn the business. You've got to understand the industry. So like all, you know, first-time reporters, I was covering obituaries and preparing obituaries for, you know, the occasion when stewards of the industry would pass away and we'd have these great obituaries on hand. After that, you're graduated into, you know, covering something as romantic as auto suppliers, maybe, you know, tire manufacturers. And so it wasn't, you know, maybe a couple of years went by before you learn and have the credibility to be able to cover something like General Motors. And General Motors was the first real beat I had as a reporter for Automotive News. And that's always a lot of fun. It was a lot of pressure because, you know, you're up against the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal when it comes to breaking stories about what's going on, and they're in our backyard. So we took it very personally. But oddly enough, one of the first stories I ever had was about the rights to the Ford GT name. And that was the first front page story I had for Automotive News. And Ford had lost the rights to the Ford GT name somehow during all the years it had been. And there were some folks that were trying to sell it back to Ford. And I remember that was the first real big story I had for Automotive News.
All right. From 2002 to 2005, you're a reporter for Automotive News. Then you became the advertising director. until 2007. Talk about that five-year chapter with Automotive News.
So what's interesting about our business is the function between editorial and sales is very similar. Jack, you're a very personable person, right? That's what you got to do. You got to get to know people. On the sales side or on the editorial side, when I started off, I had sources and I would interview people and you ask them a lot of questions and you try and find out what's going on. When you're on the sales side or the commercial side, it's all the same thing. You're talking to people, you're asking them questions, you're helping them figure out what they need to accomplish to be successful. And so, you know, people think that these are two, you know, very separate worlds when really I consider it a lot of the same function. Now, what's interesting is when, you know, you're covering General Motors for Automotive News, people want to be really nice to you and they want to make sure that, you know, they're in your good graces and, you know, they're taking you out for coffee and, you know, they're working the relationship as much as you are. When, you know, you talked about my transition over the sales side, when I ran a sales organization, you know, it switches around. And I once had an executive at Cadillac tell me that it was now my turn to buy the drinks. And so you very quickly realize how that relationship goes. And so it's a lot of fun. I mean, building teams and, you know, building commercial organizations, you learn a heck of a lot and, you know, understanding why people say no to the products you have and figuring out how to create products that, you know, people need and can't say no to. So both very impactful roles that I had in the company and both great times in my life.
All right. From 2007 to 2010, you're the publisher of Auto Week. Tell us about Auto Week.
So Auto Week was the only brand we had in Crane Communications that was a consumer-facing brand, which means that it wasn't like GD had planned all along where it was a business-to-business publication. It was for consumers, and it happened to be for consumers that love cars. And so we built Auto Week into a really nice online presence, autoweek.com, and that was all the sexy stuff, you know, driving all the fast cars and you know, understanding what was going on in the industry. It was less of the hiring and firing and more of the what's the latest Ferrari and, you know, what's the 0-60 on the new Mercedes. So, you know, being able to go to all the auto shows and the concours, that was a lot of fun.
All right. 2010, you joined the company, Crane Communications. Started in 1916, and up until 71, it was in Chicago, downtown Chicago, right by Unos. Why did you guys move it here to Detroit?
So I think I mentioned that Keith was always a big car guy. When he was a teenager, he was racing cars in the streets of Chicago, and there was an opportunity to acquire Automotive News. And when he approached GD about that possibility, my grandfather thought he was crazy. Who would ever, we're Chicago family, who would ever want to move to Detroit? And who knows anything about the car business? You know, we're in healthcare and marketing. And it was Keith who said, you know what?
It's voting early and voting often.
Exactly. Exactly. And Keith was the one that said, you know what? It's a passion of mine, and I'd be happy to go do it. So he came to Detroit. There was an office here right at 375 and Jefferson Avenue. And we were in that building for a lot of years. But that was the main reason. And then over the years, you know, as Keith became CEO and then chairman, more and more of our back office moved to Detroit. We built another building down on the river. And then about 20 years ago, we bought Brewery Park and moved the company over to Gratiot Avenue.
All right. Today, 24 brands worldwide, 108 years old, one of the most trusted names in news today. Let's talk a little bit about Crane's Detroit business.
You know, we've got Crane's Detroit, Chicago, Cleveland, New York, and just recently acquired Grand Rapids. And, you know, I was born in Detroit. I've lived here my whole life. This is a really special place. And you know, we're having a lot of fun watching the Lions these days, but they talk about grit. And that's one of Dan Campbell's favorite sayings, and I know Jared believes in it too. But this city just oozes grit. And, you know, I'm fortunate with my role to travel the world and spend a lot of time in other cities, and I don't think there's any other city like the city of Detroit. Crane's Detroit business has an opportunity to keep an eye on the business community. You know, really commit. We always talk about it internally as creating a community platform. We give people a place to meet. We host, you know, dozens of events a year in the city. We're covering everything from, you know, healthcare and finance to, you know, the automotive sector, obviously. And, you know, again, it's just a special place. And we really appreciate the opportunity to be able to cover such a great town like Detroit.
All right. You have a terrific culture. How do you go about propagating that culture throughout your entire team?
You know what? I think people underestimate the value of a family business. You and I have been sitting here chatting for a couple of minutes, and we've already talked about my grandfather, my grandmother, my father, my uncle. You know, I get to work with my brother as well. And, you know, I think that goes a long way. And the people understand that this is not your, you know, typical corporation that's a public company worried about quarterly shareholder meetings. We get to do things in a longer view fashion. We get to think about things differently, the way we invest in people, the way we invest in technology. I think that permeates. But then also, it starts with our executive team and our leadership teams, and they get access. And, I recently heard Jim Farley talk about what an advantage it is for him to have Bill Ford sitting across the hall. He needs a decision made. He can get it done pretty quickly. I think we benefit from that as well. People have access to me and vice versa. And so communication moves very fast. There's not a lot of bureaucracy. And I think it creates a culture that, employees really enjoy. And one of my proudest things about our corporate culture is how many people bring their friends to our company. You know, they get hired by Crane, they love it, and they tell their friends about it. And I think that's, some of the best word-of-mouth marketing. And, I think it's a testament to, the great culture in our company.
All right, you talk about Detroit being gritty.
Mm.
Let's go back 10 years.
Mm.
It's been 10 years since the grand bargain.
Mm.
There's going to be a special event at the DIA within a week or two. Let's go back 10 years. Talk about what Jerry Rosen and others did bringing that thing together.
Yeah, it's funny. My wife moved to Detroit about 15 years ago, and so she takes credit for most of the success that Detroit has had in the last 15 years. But,
Well, when you golf together, yeah. You take credit for the trophies that she wins.
Yeah, I wish I could. You're exactly right, though. But, 15 years ago, this was a different city. And, if you remember back to the Super Bowl in 2006 and Roger Penske's painting up the sides of buildings and, trying to put our best face forward, a lot of things have happened. Dan Gilbert coming in. How lucky is the city of Detroit to have a guy like Dan Gilbert coming in here, with the support of, families like Roger, the Penske's and the Fords and everyone else. But going back 10 years, a municipal bankruptcy. And the way this community pulled together and was able to get through it, and not only get through it, but get through it in a way that protected some of the best assets in this community, and really put us on a better footing coming out of the bankruptcy. So, I think this anniversary is something the mayor and the rest of the teams need to take a lot of credit because this city could have been could have gone the other way.
We're talking to Casey Crane. When we come back, we're going to ask him about his model. And I'm Jack Krasuva, and this is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasuva. We're with Casey Crane, Crane Communications. Your model, I quote you, put buyers and sellers together. That simple?
Yeah. When you say it like that, Jack, maybe we got to think about, how we go out in public with it. But it is that simple. If you take a look at any of the industries we're in or any of the geographies, I don't know if you've been to many Crane events lately, but we host over 500 live events now. And we think about those as live journalism. So it's an editorial event that covers a topic in a city or an industry. But then it's all about the people there. And, coming out of COVID, I think people now more than ever, not only do they want to network and be together, but they need it. And so that's been a premise, we've been doing for a very long time. It works super well for us. I'd go back to what you said earlier in the last segment, which is, the trusted information part. I think that also goes a long way to separate what we do from everybody else. If you come to a Crane event, Not only is the content going to be completely unbiased and informational and very helpful, but the people that are there are going to be folks that you want to be with.
All right, let's go back 22 years. You start, young reporter. Print was the king. Time Magazine, Sports Illustrated, etc. Sports Illustrated is down to once a month. Everything is online today. Talk about the transformation of media in these last 20 plus years.
Jack, I don't think we have enough time. We got a lot to cover. So if you go back you know, to the early days of the internet, publishers like Crane had been doing one thing the same way for a very long time. And, you know, I think it worked out very well that the guys that were in charge at the time had mastered the idea of print publishing. They had understood that. Luckily for them, they had a next generation that had come up and grown up and were much more comfortable with the internet, what the internet meant to our business. I'd be lying if I told you there weren't some scary days there when you got extremely concerned about, you know, the effect that was going to have. But you fast forward two decades and you understand that all it does is open up more audiences to you. It allows you to reach people in ways that you could never imagine. You know, we send out over a billion emails a year. Now, Jack, that's probably too many emails. But for all of our different brands, for all of the different sectors and sections and industries and niches, we create a lot of content that reaches massive audiences. I mean, we're almost reaching 100 million people a year now across all these different brands and different industries. So, you know, you want to talk about the evolution of an industry. It went from, you know, a very simple model, which was sell a page of advertising, print a page of editorial, ship it to your customer. Now the sophistication around how we reach our audiences, you know, the different platforms they want to be on. You can't just be a publisher now. You've got to be able to reach people, you know, through application technology. You've got to be software engineers. You've got to be everywhere they are, mobile devices, in their car streaming. You know, obviously we still do a lot of printing and, you know, we'll provide that for the audiences that want it. But, you know, folks are on their desktops and they're on their mobile devices most of the day now. So, you know, for us to be able to transition, I give so much credit to our teams and our leadership. You look at the daily newspapers, you know, I think one of the big mistakes they made is they let their news, their content turn into a commodity. They covered things the way that, a lot of other people did, and that, you know, really takes away the value. And so for us, you know, good quality journalism is expensive, and we keep investing in it. And at the same time, we've got to invest in our technology and our strategies. And so we're going to meet people where they want to be. But, you know, the evolution has been significant, especially even if you look at the last 5 years. And now, Jack, think about AI and what that's going to do to everything and how we approach, you know, the way we cover things, the way artificial intelligence, you know, can both help us and be a hindrance a lot of the time. So we're never bored, that's for sure. We've got a lot to do, but, you know, technology's played a really important role in the evolution of our business, you know, especially in the last decade or so.
All right. What do all great journalists have in common, Casey?
You know, it's interesting. I thought you were going to ask about that. And I tell you that the best journalists are really good at listening. And I tell you that's one thing they all have in common because, you know, they're going to listen to somebody telling a story and they're going to hear something that nobody else does. And that's going to probe another question. But, you know, if you can't listen, you're never going to be successful in our field. That's for sure.
Pam and Ashley are listening to this, and they say the two of you talk the game.
We got some work to do. Yeah.
So, all right. How did you figure out how to get people to pay for this online content?
You know, I think the internet was undervalued in big ways early on, and we were always very comfortable charging people for print products. And the funny thing is, the internet created this endless hole. This endless well of information, and you can feed it as much as you want. It just goes and goes. And so, you know, for us, we were spending a lot of money to produce amazing content, and we didn't have the courage to lock it down. And it was really during the early in the pandemic where we knew all of a sudden our traffic is going crazy. We knew everyone was at home. We knew they needed our content. We knew they were digesting it in a lot of ways that we could measure. And so we started testing, and, you know, there's a lot of organizations, the New York Times, they were a front runner, the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, and we definitely followed suit very quickly. And we had to train audiences. You had to explain to people that, you know, the journalism, the content was worth paying for. And I always got a chuckle when folks on social media would say, I really want to read this story, but I got to pay for it. Well, sure. I mean, when you go to a restaurant, you usually got to pay for your lunch, right? So, I think it took a little while for folks to understand that we're investing a lot in journalism to serve these industries and to serve these communities. We internally as well had to get comfortable, charging a fee.
Let's go to 2030. Paint for us a picture of Crane Communication in 2030.
Jack, it's nearly impossible to have an outlook this far these days. Can we go with 2025? Another great thing that has been a byproduct of our investment in technology is creating great platforms. And what I mean by that is we now have a capability of acquiring businesses and putting them on our platforms. A lot of this technology is proprietary, and it allows you to grow through acquisitions. So, you could find a new sector like oil and gas and say, well, you know, Crane's not really participating there. You know, why don't we set up a foothold in oil and gas or energy per se? And the other thing is we've got big opportunities to grow, you know, whether it's 2026 or 2030. We have opportunities to grow in industries that are being completely disrupted by technology. If you look at every industry that we cover, I don't care if it's healthcare or advertising and marketing or automotive, everyone's being disrupted. So, in automotive, because we're sitting here in Detroit, if you think about the EV revolution and what's now a huge pullback, it created dozens of new audiences for automotive news. Supply chain, energy distribution, new powertrain technologies. There's lots of different things for us to cover and lots of new audiences for us to serve. So to your question, several years out, Crane's going to look bigger and we'll have, grown both in organic and inorganic ways in new sectors and also by expanding in sectors we're already in.
We're talking to Casey Crane. When we come back, we ask about the move that the company took to Brewery Park Complex in 2001. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything Is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything Is Possible, and I'm Jack Crisullo.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love. Stay humble.
The great Ernie Harwell.
My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God.
And the voices of our generation.
I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis.
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything Is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club. Developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything is possible.
go home. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Casey Crane. If you want to learn more, www.crane.com. Okay, 2001. Headquarters go to Brewery Park Complex, Gratiot Avenue, Eastern Market. Paint for us a picture of what the streets were like in the Eastern Market and downtown Detroit then.
Yeah, that's it's a bit of a tricky question, Jack, only because it's so hard to remember and you don't really want to.
Dick,
you
know, Cheney could hunt for 2 weeks and not even hurt anybody. That's what Woodward Wright was like.
Yeah.
That's Tom Wilson.
Okay. Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, it was a different place. It still had, I mean, even back then, Jack, it was so much fun being in downtown Detroit. You know, you had sports teams down here. We had concerts. You're in this beautiful building with an amazing theater. It's not like nobody came downtown. It was just a different thing. There wasn't the opportunity to live and to play, as Dan Gilbert always says, right in the central business district. It was definitely quieter. When I got out of school, I moved to downtown Detroit, and it was lonely. There's nobody down here. There's nowhere to eat dinner. So I quickly moved north, but now I'm so jealous of all these kids that get to come down and experience this amazing city that's really evolved over the last two decades. But yeah, it was a little bit more bleak in 2001.
Eastern Market today, please.
Eastern Market today, some amazing places to eat. You know, we're fortunate. We're literally next door. So we walk out our back door and we're in the Eastern Market and able to go enjoy, some of the amazing food that's there. The Farmer's Market on Tuesday has been a great addition. Farmer's Market over the weekend. Unfortunately, we've lost a couple of our favorite spots to fire just recently. I don't know if you've been to the Eastern Market during a Lions game recently, but, other than some of the unfortunate recent events, it is a lot of fun. It is packed, and it's definitely a different Detroit.
All right. Let's talk about family businesses thriving through multiple generations. 80% of family businesses fail after the first generation. You're in the third.
Yeah. Do you know what the percentage is of third generations making it?
I think 11%.
11%. You got it.
What's the magic formula?
Well, I don't think there's any magic formula. I think 80% of companies in America today are family businesses. Whether it's first, second, or third, I think you always need to have somebody in charge of putting the family first. And I think that's first and foremost. You can read 1,000 different books on the best way to sustain family businesses, what the next generation should do. They should work in another company. They need to go get their master's. They need to work for another family business. There's lots of different things you can do. I'll tell you, I think one of the biggest benefits of our business is it was vast enough that there was plenty of room for everybody. And things were changing so often that there was a huge need for generational perspective. So, when you look back at it and you say, holy smokes, you could almost call it four generations with the age gap with my grandmother. But in 108 years, we've had, three generations. My brother and I have five children now. He's got four. You got Gen 4 knocking on the door, and, we're going to have to figure these things out. But to answer your question, I don't think there's a magic bullet. It's one day at a time. And again, I think one of the most important things is, as my mother always said, we just got to make sure we have another Thanksgiving.
All right. One of the greatest things you ever did was convince Ashley to marry you.
That's for sure. I was a good sales guy.
She's as nice a human being as you're ever going to meet in your life.
Well, she's Canadian.
And she's a phenomenal golfer.
Yeah, that's true.
What's it like being married to a lady that you've got no chance to ever beat?
I thought we were going to save this one, but he just couldn't help himself. It's a lot of fun, and I've got four daughters. I love watching my girls watch Ashley play golf. She was a phenomenal Division I golfer, and it's honestly a lot of fun. It took, I'm a competitive person. I was a mild athlete as well as I was growing up. It took me a minute to get used to get my butt kicked by my wife in golf, but now, it's our date night. We love the sport. And it's a lot of fun.
All right. One of the things you learned from Mom and Dad was giving back.
Yeah.
All right. Crane Communication has partners with Michigan State University to ignite the future program.
Yeah. You know, journalism is a very challenging field these days. There aren't a lot of kids that wake up in the morning and say, geez, I really want to get into the media field. And we obviously think it's very important. If you look at what's going on in the political landscape today, local journalism means a lot, and it's important to a lot of people, and we need to make sure it stays as strong as we can. The program with Michigan State is absolutely wonderful. It's a way for us to connect to communities that we wouldn't necessarily be a part of. And it's a way for us to interact with the next generation of journalists and of media professionals. And Jack, what's fun too is now, you know, with technology, if you want to be a journalist, doesn't mean you got to, you know, sit behind a computer and write stories all day. You could be out in the field. You could be filming with your iPhone. You could be doing social media, uploading TikTok videos. You know, our field is become extremely vast. So, you know, I think it's a lot more fun and a lot more appealing to folks. And I think this partnership is just one of the, you know, great many partnerships we have at Crane.
Since 2016, you've been the chair of the board of Detroit Children's Fund.
So DCF is, you know, it's been an incredible journey. Jack, we've got a very serious need in the city of Detroit when it comes to education. The pandemic, you know, really set everything back. You know, it was already a challenge before. And, you know, I think, you know, we got knocked down a little bit more during the pandemic. But the Children's Fund is really just to support operators of schools. That's our goal, is to find good operators of schools in the city. Could be charter schools, could be public schools. And we just want to fund people that are doing good things and supporting kids. And there's, you know, 110,000 kids in the city of Detroit. And I think with a lot of community involvement, we can, you know, we can figure out how to serve most of them.
Casey Crane, thank you for all you and your team does for this city and America. Keep up the great work.
Thanks for having me, Jack. Great to see you.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Priscilla. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.